And today our guest is Dr. Barbara Dossey, who is nationally recognized as one of the foremost American nurses. She is a fellow of the American Academy of Nursing and a seven-time recipient of the prestigious American Journal of Nursing Book of the Year Award. She is a nurse leader and nurse healer of national and international acclaim. Her numerous awards include being named as the 1998 Healer of the Year by the Nurse Healer International Association. In 1999, she received the Pioneering Spirit Award by the American Association of Critical Care Nurses. In 2003, she received the Archon Award from the International Honor Society for Nursing for her work in promoting global health. And in 2004, she received the Pioneer of Integrative Medicine Award from the Aspen Center for Integrative Medicine in Aspen, Colorado. Barbara is recognized around the world as a pioneer in the holistic nursing movement, and the current focus of her work includes compassionate care for the dying and virtual education. Barbara, we are delighted and honored to have you with us today, and thank you so much for taking the time to be with us.
Well, it is a treat to be here, and I have had colleagues that you have interviewed, and they just say, what a wonderful experience this is.
Well, I'm delighted, and we want this to be a wonderful experience for you and the audience, which I know it will be for them as well. In preparing for your interview, Barbara, it was very difficult, given the enormous accomplishment and the phenomenal career that you've had as a nurse and as a researcher and as a writer and as a global citizen, to come up with a starting point for your interview. But in your sharing with me the phenomenal interview that you did with Alternative Therapies, it became very clear that in addition to everything else, you are a consummate storyteller. And this is a program that's devoted to storytelling, telling stories about the nurses, about their patients, and about nursing in general. So if you'd be good enough, if you would start us off on your journey, how you started in nursing, and then how you became very invested in holistic nursing, and how you got to be where you are today.
Well, I think it would be good then to start with my undergraduate degree is from Baylor University in Dallas, Texas. I was in school 1961 to 65. I was very blessed to have remarkable instructors, professors, that valued spirituality and healing. I was then very blessed to move into a university setting where this was also valued. So I entered nursing at a time where body, mind, and spirit was something that was addressed consistently. Now, my background, I fell in love with critical care as a student, and that was where I began working, and that was my focus for over 25 years. What happened in the 80s is we began to have a love affair with technology, and we began to look at this curing of disease and the high technology. Somewhere along the way, healing got lost. I think it is useful to look at my own personal journey and, you know, how did it really impact me in a deep way. Several years after I was out of school, I went to Mexico and got a viral infection. You know, many people get turista when they go to Mexico, and I had eaten some contaminated food. For me, it broke out in a fever, a high fever, and within, about 12 hours, I was unable to really see out of my right eye because I developed, like most people develop, fever blisters on their lip. Well, this was a fever blister on my cornea.
Wow.
So my vision was completely blurred and a very painful eye. This went on for a period of almost 9 years before I finally had a corneal transplant. But what happened in that period of time is I would do fine for a while, and then it would clear up, and then in a very short period of time it would erupt again, and every time it erupted it built up scar tissue, and that's what led to the corneal transplant because I couldn't see out of my right eye. But at that period of time I started really reading this new field of work called stress in the literature, and it became very clear that intellectually I understood what stress was. But as far as having those really deep skills of what it was in any given moment in time to literally step off the treadmill of life and go into deep relaxation, to go into deep imagery, into meditation. I intellectually, of course, understood it, having read it from books. I did not have the practical skills. So after my transplant, this is when I really began to put all of these pieces together. And as I began to then incorporate stress management, meditation, relaxation, and moved into imagery in a very deep way there, I began to practice differently in the critical care unit.
Mm-hmm.
And then I will also say that I was very blessed. My husband, Larry Dossey, became very interested. He was practicing internal medicine. And Larry, too, had migraine headaches at that time, and he began to move into biofeedback, you know, for his own personal, you know, self-care. And as he was doing that, I also had access to the biofeedback equipment that he was using, as well as different literature that I was not reading. And I began to say, there's no difference in what he's doing for migraine headaches and how I can keep my eye from erupting, you know, with another bout of the dendritic keratitis, the fever blister under cornea is what that is.
It was nice to have a partner in all of this, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, and it is. Larry is also an author, and so we have literally grown up together in this field and challenged each other to many limits to really push to understand the work more deeply.
Well, we want to later on in the interview talk about your extraordinary husband who whose career parallels your own extraordinary career. But we're going to save that for dessert for later. But we have so much to talk about you, Barbara, and the phenomenal work that you've done, the writing, the teaching. You are, I guess, at this point in time, one of the most well-known nurse authors in the United States. You have, how many books have you written?
Oh, my heavens. And I would definitely want to say that almost all of these I have co-authored with my dear colleagues, Kathy Gazzetta and then Lee Keegan, my holistic nursing. You put them all together, and there are 24.
Wow, that is quite an accomplishment.
And I am, you know, putting in there the big books, but then there are the pocket guides, there are the manuals, there are the audio tape programs. So I'm putting all of those together. And the critical care and cardiovascular nursing books.
Well, in addition to all of that writing, you also have been teaching. You've been doing so many things. How have you found the time to do all of this? I know I'm sitting here thinking that. I'm sure the audience is sitting there saying, how did this woman do that? How have you been able to incorporate all your passions, accomplish as much as you have, and still have, a very important and fulfilling life as a wife and as a global citizen?
I'm a focused person, what can I say? And I have learned the skills, and a lot of that comes through my own self-care early on, is when I am at home, I go into my office, and by golly, I am in there, and I keep, like, office hours. I do a lot of self-care. I exercise, you know, I try to do it at least every other day, but, you know, lots of times I will go 5 days in a row and exercise. I take breaks, which is absolutely essential to doing good work.
So you really follow the American Holistic Nurses Association guidelines for being, living, and doing holistic nursing and holistic living. Now, didn't you just recently, you participated in rewriting the guidelines, the five aspects of the holistic nursing recommendations?
I was on that committee to revise the American Holistic Nurse Association standards of practice. And then worked on creating that framework for the advanced standards of practice. And I'm just absolutely thrilled to say that there will be a new core curriculum. Noreen Frisch will be taking that on as the editor. I was the editor of the first core curriculum, but I need to be doing other things now, and it has been taking over with, you know, just some of the finest talent in the American Holistic Nurses Association.
Now, that core curriculum I believe you're referring to constitutes the certification program for becoming a holistic nurse. So you have, in addition to everything else you've been doing, you wrote and set the standard of what does a nurse need to know? What does she need to integrate into her work to be certified, to take the test and be certified as a holistic nurse?
But keep in mind, that was a committee, and we had 25 to 30 people on that committee. I just happened to be one of the co-chairs of it. And I think this is important when you talk about the things that I've done in my life. I am one of these people that absolutely loves to partner and do projects. And it's even like with, yes, I'm a single author on my Florence Nightingale Mystic Visionary Healer. But along the way then, I did connect with Nightingale scholars from around the world. And we would meet and get together, and we would share our research with each other and support each other, because we're all taking different avenues in that research. So that has been one of the great joys of my entire nursing career, is to find soulmates and to partner with people in doing these projects.
Well, I'm not surprised to hear you say that, because all of your work deals with the relationship-centered part of living and being and nursing. And so I'm sure that this insinuates itself into everything that you do. Barbara, we're going to take a very short break for some public service announcements, but when we come back, we want to talk more about this wonderful model of holistic nursing that you are very committed to and very passionate about. So don't anyone go away. We're going to be back in one moment with more of Barbara Dossi.
Welcome to Flight 38.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry. You can't sit there.
Isn't it open seating?
This is the whites only section.
Whites only?
Mm-hmm. You'll need to move back to the colored section.
Ma'am, I'm a vice president.
Please move back and we'll be on our way.
Fine.
Imagine what America would be like today if Martin Luther King never had a dream. To learn about the Martin Luther King National Memorial Project in Washington, D.C., visit buildthedream.org. A public service message from the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Foundation and the Ad Council.
This is Brad Paisley. A great song has a way of tugging at your heart, but nothing tugs at my heart like the kids who are being helped at Shriners Hospitals. I know firsthand because I'm a Shriner. The Shriners provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care to kids, totally free of charge. And they combine that care with progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Each night, thousands of kids in America are sent to bed without dinner. Not because they did anything wrong, but because many families don't have enough money to pay the bills and buy food. The simple fact is, one in five kids in America faces hunger. You can help by calling 1-800-FEED-KIDS or by visiting feedingchildrenbetter.org. Hunger, a choice no one should have to make. A public service message brought to you by America's Second Harvest, Feeding Children Better, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. We're talking to Dr. Barbara Dossi, who is a nationally recognized American nurse who has done extraordinary work as a writer, a teacher, a healer, and as a outstanding scholar and a Nightingale scholar, which we will be talking in great detail with her about a little later on in the program. Barbara, before the break, we talked about your wonderful passion for holistic nursing. So if you would be good enough, would you share with us the essence of holistic nursing? And if you would answer the question for us, why don't we find holistic nursing completely integrated and embraced in our mainstream medical system today?
Very important. Well, first, I defined holistic nursing. It's not my definition. It's the American Holistic Nurses Association. And the listener, by the way, can go look at the AHNA and just go to www.ahna.org to find out information on the AHNA. But holistic nursing is defined by the AHNA. It embraces all of nursing, and it really has that enhancement of healing the whole person from birth to death as its goal. And the philosophy also is deep in the fact that the nurse is an instrument in the healing process. It is he or she that facilitates this healing process. And so holistic nurses honor all the, I think it's the subjective experiences that we have to look at in holistic nursing. It's, yes, you follow the evidence-based practice and you look at the protocols and so forth, But what nurses do is they listen well to the patient's story, because that is where the healing happens. And so when I use that word healing, this, you know, our healthcare system right now is focused on curing, and that's where it is. But what nurses do really well, every nurse knows about this, and it is healing. And healing's a lifelong journey. And what a nurse will do is touch a patient's story. That nurse will listen to a thread of a story and figure out what needs to be in this moment in time. Because the healing can happen in this moment in time. We don't have to worry about 2 hours from now, 3 months from now, a year from now, or what happened in the past, what can happen in the past to bring that forward if the time is right and the nurse knows, you know, if that is part of the story that needs to be brought up. That healing can happen. Let me give a practical example of when my daddy died.
Oh, that's a great story, and thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, and I can talk about this now, but it took me probably close to a year before I could tell this story without crying. Daddy was a big, strapping, wonderful human being, never been sick in his life. He was 81, and he shot an 81 on his 81st birthday, and 3 months later was dead. Daddy had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. If you've got to have, a cancer, this is the one to have because it's very treatable. But for whatever reason, it was Daddy's time to go. He had the best technology possible. And when I look at the very end, a living will had been signed. He did not ruin any heroic efforts, but he was taken to the hospital because he fainted. And mom did call 911, but it was just to, you know, give him fluids and, see, you know, what could happen. What did happen, though, is Daddy, they did, short of, you know, really doing all the heroics, is he did go into a slow rate, and he did have to be resuscitated, but, you know, he went on. They couldn't resuscitate him, which was the way it should have been. But at the very end, before Daddy died, the critical care nurse that was taking care of Daddy, he was 6'4", Daddy was 6'4", my mom is 5 feet, and a tall nurse will put the bed in a very top position to take care of the patient. And when the nurse saw mom coming into the room, knowing that Daddy was very, very critical at that point and may not make it, he lowered the bed to a very low position. He opens up a space for mother to get next to Daddy, and he tells mom, you know, that Daddy hadn't been responding, that he really seemed to be unconscious at this point. But mother and Daddy were patters, and so mother just went up to Daddy. She puts her hands on his cheek, and she goes, "Sweetie, how are you?" Daddy pulls off. He hasn't been responding to this nurse. He hears mother's voice, pulls off his oxygen mask, and he says, "Babe, they won't let me alone in here." And mom said, "Honey, I hope they don't leave you alone so I can take you home." And Daddy looked at mom and he said, "Babe, I just know I'm not going to make it." And mother's last words to Daddy before he went into cardiac arrest and couldn't be resuscitated was, "Honey, if you don't make it, I'll see you in heaven."
Oh, isn't
and that? Those were the final words. So this is a healing moment for my family. This is how healing can happen among the technology.
Mm-hmm.
Then the other thing that was absolutely just wonderful is when Daddy did die very shortly thereafter, the nurse prepared Daddy, went out to the waiting room. I was caught in a snowstorm in Rochester, but the family and good friends that were there, he invited mother in to see Daddy, and mother said, "No, I can't go in there." And what the nurse said is, "I just want you to know that he died with a smile on his face." And my mother and brother and nephew went immediately back in and stayed with Daddy for about 45 minutes.
What a moving example,
yeah.
Barbara.
Is how healing can happen in this moment of time, where a nurse sees a situation and uses his or her consciousness in his own, you know, in the patient or the family's behalf.
Well, you talk a lot about intuition in your work, and It sounds as if a great deal of what you experienced with your dad and your family experienced was the intuition of the nurse who really saw the whole person, the whole family, the whole need that was in front of him.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk more about intuition and nursing? Because I know that's a very big part of the Nightingale work that you're involved with, talking about her vision and her concepts, which I know is very heavily laden with intuition.
Right. Well, defining intuition, and it certainly is in the American Holistic Nurses Association standards of practice, and the way intuition is defined there is really looking at a perceived knowing of things and events. Even though there's not any conscious, rational process of what's supposed to happen, in your gut, in your senses, you know that there is something going on, and so you address it. Now, nurses that are listening, they do this all the time. They go make rounds on a patient, and the numbers and the data and the patient looks okay, but by golly, in your gut, you know that something is going on there. And this is when nurses will more frequently check on that patient, and I bet there are many nurses listening that know where they've given a report to a doc, and they, by golly, their gut pulls them back into that room for no, conscious data.
Mm-hmm.
And they go back into the room, and this is when that patient's getting ready to get out of bed, pull an IV out, go into cardiac arrest. So with intuition, then I think another thing we can do is move into that concept of intention. And this is that deep experience of where you literally move into a space, and with intention, it's that where you take your consciousness and your being, and you focus, and you create a ritual, a sacred space of mind and being right in that moment.
Barbara, I'd like to share something with the audience that comes from your interview with Alternative Therapies, because it's so perfect what you said.
Okay.
They asked you, they commented and said, well, that kind of care, that kind of holistic care takes time. And you said, actually, no, what it takes is intention in the nurse's consciousness, which is instantaneous and timeless. How beautiful. Would you continue along that vein and talk to us about what distinguishes the nurse's ability to be holistic with regard to her intentionality?
Let me just go back and finish a story then with Daddy, because I think that would be very useful. And I always look at, if people say we can't do this, I think about if that is me in the hospital or the clinic, or if that's my, my mother, my father, brother, sister, any of my relatives or good friends, what would I like to see happen there? And shortly, about 6 weeks after Daddy died, Mom had to be admitted to the hospital because she had some acute abdominal pain that, was worked out. But I will never forget the nurse who had read the intake, the one piece of paper that Mother had filled out, and this was the first time that Mother had had the circle W. And when that was done, Mother got tearful, and the nurse saw Mother tearful, and she said, what is it that it is like for you right now to be a widow? How are you doing? And all Mother had to say in that moment, it's one of the hardest journeys of my life, and I am lucky to have the support of my family and friends. Thank you for asking. At that particular point, that nurse could have done nothing wrong. But you see how she just intuitively saw that there was something going on here. Oh, and the clue there is Mother had circled W, and she said, for 6 weeks. She had been a widow for 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And so the nurse just picked up on that. The story didn't last long, but there was a deep healing and a sacred space between nurse and my mom at that particular moment in time.
It goes back to that concept of being present in the moment, being aware, being human. Being a human being is a very complex thing, because the mind is always distracting us from our interaction. Right. And I'm sure that in your many writings about holistic nursing, that is a theme. How do you resolve the dilemma that most of us have between the mind that wants to do and the heart and the soul that wants to be?
I really feel very strongly that this is where our own sacred practices of rituals of healing come in. If we are not taking quality time for ourselves, a minimum of 15 to 20 minutes a day, how can we go in and participate at this deep level of being present with another? So we have to do our work. Frequently what happens with, you know, life is, it's incredibly busy. You know, where does the time go when you know that you have worked all day long and you've tried to, you know, strike things off your list, or in, you know, working in a clinic situation or in the hospital? And then we have our own, you know, personal lives after we get through with the dedicated work that we're doing. But within that, we have to take time for ourselves. And this is one of the core values in the American Holistic Nurses Association. It's core value 3, and it's called nurse self-care. So each of us has to decide what we are going to do for that caring. How do we create this healing presence within ourselves? And it's finding what we're going to do. And let's look at the busy hospital nurse. It's just absolutely amazing and a crazy pace. That's all it, you know, for sure. So how can the nurse have that healing presence at the bedside? It requires that he or she, with colleagues, say, we have to have our morning breaks, our afternoon breaks. We have to back off and get off of this busy floor, critical care unit, whatever it is, for a 30-minute lunch break. And if a nurse is standing up eating in a critical care unit, that's not a lunch break. We're talking about this shift of consciousness. And so nurses need to come together to truly value that this is very important. And when a staff gets together, and one of the first things they say is, okay, how are we going to build in care here? Time is created to take those breaks.
Well, that is a very challenging question within the environments today, isn't it? How do we create these caring cultures within hospitals, within nursing homes, and what have you? And we could talk about that, you know, for a very long period of time, and, and still come up with some, you know, some blockages and some roadblocks that, you know, we really need to work on within the profession of healthcare. But if you can believe this, another bunch of time has gone by, and we're
I know
we're done with the second quarter of this interview. It's just whizzing by, Barbara. We're going to take a very short break again, and when we come back, if you want, let's talk about how do you see the transformation of the healing cultures taking place within the next 10 years. You wrote extensively within your work about the vision of cooperation, the vision of process and journey and integration of these principles into cultures and environments. So when we come back, if you can talk about your vision for that, and then we might want to talk about Florence Nightingale, which you are so passionately connected with. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back. We have so much to talk about. Don't go away, anybody.
I'm Selma, and I'll be your server this evening. The special is pasta primavera, and it comes with a salad. Oh, and by the way, I abuse my children. Lots of times I beat them for even the smallest reason. When they really get on my nerves, I lock them in the closet for a few hours.
If only child abuse were this easy to recognize, perhaps then more people would report it. If you even suspect abuse, call Child Help USA at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. That's 1-800-422-4453. We've helped millions of people help millions of children. And we can help you. All calls are anonymous and confidential. So remember, 1-800-4-A-CHILD. That's 1-800-422-4453. Child Help USA. Trust your instincts. A public service message brought to you by Child Help USA and the Ad Council.
Which sound is more disturbing, the crying child or the total absence of footsteps from anyone coming to help? AIDS has created over 14 million orphans worldwide. That's the equivalent of every child under 5 in America, with nobody to watch over them. To help, please go to apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
Brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hear that? That's our little Madison. In just a few weeks, he's going to pop into this world a real, living, breathing person. Now, listen to this. That's the sound of me doing nothing to help out with her future because I don't bother to support after-school programs. But it's not just my own child's opportunities I'm shrugging off. It's yours, too. Because I found it more convenient to take after-school programs for granted. A few minutes a day of not thinking about kids can help take away their opportunities for sports, the arts, all kinds of things that could help them get a step up in life. Hey, little Maddie, did you know that violent crime triples in the hours after school? Daddy's turning his back on after-school programs. That helps put more kids on the streets during peak violent hours. If you want to be negligent like I am, don't call this number, 1-866-KIDS-TODAY. And remember not to log on to afterschoolnow.org. Right, sweet pea?
After-school programs. Ignore them and they'll go away. A public service message brought to you by the After-School Alliance, the Mott Foundation, and the Ad Council.
And we're back. We're talking to Dr. Barbara Dossi. And before the break, Barbara, we were talking about your vision for how we can come to transform the healthcare cultures in America, how we can take the holistic journey that is slow and sure and mindful and respectful and begin to transform our healing cultures in a way that is healthy, not only for the patients, but for the nurses, the doctors, and for everyone else who comes in contact with that culture.
I'm very hopeful about what can happen in the future and what will happen in the future. So the big thing that we have to start from is this caring consciousness. And when one shifts to this caring consciousness, you simply can no longer go in and do and work at the way things are done. The wheels of healthcare have come off. So now what we can do as nurses is enter into a very deep dialogue with not only our nurse colleagues, but with everybody else on the healthcare team. There are the majority of nurses, as we know, on any kind of a healthcare team. Nurses are the key people that understand the whole process, and they put all of these pieces together. Now, I think it's useful to bring in, where does Nightingale fit in this? Some of our listeners may not know that Nightingale died in 1910. She was born in 1820. And I will tell you that when I began doing my Nightingale research, I was just astounded. How could I, as an educated nurse, not know anything about the story of Florence Nightingale? Now, in my classic biography, yes, that is the story of her life, and it is specifically looking at her mystical spiritual journey that informed her life. But in this next book that I will be having, it will come out, I'm so excited, with nursebooks.org, the ANA Press, in September. And we are doing interpretive biography there. And what we are doing is going back and visiting Nightingale's works, Notes on Nursing, her 1872 to 1900 letters to her nurses, and her 1893 great essay, where she defines sick nursing and health nursing, and she has written a curriculum for us to go into global health. But there's a concept in interpretive biography that is just marvelous, and it's called pentimento. What this means is there's something painted out of a picture, and then when you take the paint off of an old picture, something again becomes visible. And what is new is what was previously covered up, and this is Nightingale's story. So Nightingale's life for us is a pentimento, and it presents a blueprint for us today, for contemporary nursing, and what our vision is, because whatever we do today moves toward creating a healthy future. So I truly believe, and with my colleagues, Louise Seelander's Diva Beck, and Alex Attable, who will be the co-authors with me on this project, and all of my wonderful H&A brothers and sisters, is we truly believe that it's, you know, why has nursing lost its soul? And a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's impossible to understand the art and science of nursing if we don't have a sense of history.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, and also the time factor today. Don't you think, Barbara, that the time that is kind of allocated for performing different tasks and serving the patient, that time factor is a very strong impediment to the regaining or the reprocessing of the soul of nursing?
But see, here's where it comes together, is you asked me to tell some of my stories in the very beginning. Every nurse has thousands of stories within his or her experience. We know a lot about how to shift from the crazy madness that happens on the floors. It is figuring out how do we create some of these swing shifts? How do we find time for nurses to get breaks, to go to lunch? What do we need? What is the auxiliary help that can come in? We haven't begun to put this together. We have now prototype hospitals that are working. I think some of the wonderful models that we can look at are the magnet hospitals. And anybody can go to the American Nurses Association website and look up magnet hospitals. There are those 14 points that they're called magnetism. And the hospitals right now that have this designation of magnet hospital, they're figuring out a lot of these answers. And so the prototypes are set there. And so you look at the scope and standards of ANA practice. You look at the scope and standards of all of our subspecialty organizations. The language in the American Holistic Nurse Association standards, they are there. We cannot today tack on these new words of caring and healing and consciousness and intention and intuition. You have to shift it. You have to feel it. You have to experience it. So every hospital has the capacity within their system, because there are those nurses within those hospitals that, by golly, understand this. So let's start having these kinds of workshops that are caring and healing, self-care, for our nurses in every hospital. They get continuing education for it.
Absolutely. And isn't that a trend now? I mean, there are so many people who are doing this work, such as Lucia Thornton, and I know Andros, and people who are actually beginning to offer models and methods and ways of reigniting and re-experiencing what you're talking about, which is so critical. Now, Barbara, I have a question I'm dying to ask. I'm sure the audience wants to know, too. You have really become the probably the major biographer on Florence Nightingale. You clearly have immersed yourself in her work, her life, her writings, and her vision. What do you think the reason for Florence Nightingale kind of letting herself be known again at this point in time and our healthcare history? Do you think she's speaking to us across the centuries? How do you feel as her biographer? How do you feel about bringing her and her work back into consciousness?
It has been one of the exciting journeys of my professional career. I had no idea that I would get into what I did. I read a couple of secondary, and I will say they're a contemporary biographer, is, you know, what my work is about. What I think is important here is that when I began this research in 1992, I was just so overwhelmed with all of my support and my colleagues and my participation in nursing organizations and having like-minded colleagues. I just went, one day I just said, you know, what did Florence Nightingale do when she was confronted with this? Because I had never studied her. And when I went back and started, I started with secondary research, and then where one becomes a Nightingale scholar is you go back and you do primary research. This means reading the original letters. And Nightingale left us 14,000 letters in the archives. 10,000 of those are at the British Library, and the Nightingale collection of private letters is the largest private collection of letters. So Nightingale has left us it is our foundation, it's our philosophy. And one of the things a while ago when I was talking about Pentimento, If we don't understand our history, I use a metaphor there, and it's like trying to plant cut flowers and expecting them to grow. If we don't look at this deep, important core of healing, which Nightingale left us, we're going to lose our way again. So I think that it's like what happens in history, though. About every 100 years, things start circling, and we look at past history. So Nightingale is, you know, 2010 is going to be her 100th death year, having died in 1910. For me, Nightingale is one of those, she is the person that can link us with our past for what we're doing now in contemporary nursing to the future. And I believe that one of the great gifts that she has left us in her legacy, and what we will be approaching in this new book, Florence Nightingale Today, is her three major tenets of healing, leadership, and global action. So through Nightingale's work, we will be able to enter into deep dialogue. And in my work now, I am writing about transdisciplinary dialogue. It is where we enter with colleagues from different disciplines, and we literally solve the problems about how we can have a healthcare system that is caring and healing. And so when we enter into dialogue, what it means that we're going to have new transdisciplinary challenges. We've become very wedded to thinking this is the way to do stuff. But when we move into these dialogues, we're going to have to deconstruct ideas that we've become very wedded to. We're going to have to listen well to each other's stories.
Well, it sounds like you're proposing the ultimate model of cooperation.
Yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And isn't that what we need? Isn't that what we all really long for, is to be heard, to be seen, to be valued, and to interact with one another in this very meaningful and very cooperative way?
Yeah, yeah. Nightingale called her worker must. And her work was in the personal, it was in the political, it was in the social, and it was in the scientific domains. And so if we look at Nightingale and her work and what she was doing, this is what is called for us, and we're already doing it, but let's do it in a big way together. And, you know, you can put an ing on a lot of words, because this is what nurses do. You know, they're always analyzing, they're communicating, they're creating, they're developing, they're exchanging, they're teaching, they're investigating, they're mentoring, they're researching.
You could say that nurses are verb-driven, huh?
but it's our work. It's our exquisite work. And so when we put all of this work that we do, it's just not, we have to move from task, yes, that's important, but within task, it's all of this other level of consciousness and knowing and doing and being that we are doing.
Well, Barbara, your passion, your enthusiasm, I love listening to you. I know the audience is just getting excited and getting inspired just hearing your voice and the absolutely authentic and sincere love that you have for not only nursing but for communicating and for really connecting to each of us and all of us. And believe it or not, we are getting ready to take another break and come back for the last portion of our program. There's so much to talk to you about. We have your whole personal life, your wonderful marriage to Dr. Larry Dossey, who is in and of himself quite the icon in integrative medicine. So when we come back, if you want to share with us a little bit more about yourself and a few more of your stories, and if you want to touch on your work with Larry, we'll look very forward to it. We'll be right back. Don't anyone go anywhere.
This is Arnold Palmer. Parades, conventions, fun, and friendship. The Shriners have a lot of proud traditions, but none they're more proud of than the Shriners Hospitals for Children. I know, I'm a Shriner. The Shriners provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care to kids, totally without charge. And they combine that with progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. Call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Oh, great shot. Hi, I'm Robert.
And I'm Mabel.
Now that we're retired, we have more time for doing the things we've always wanted, like shrugging off the future of our nation's youth.
It's so easy. All you have to do is not support after-school programs. 15 million youngsters in this country are left unsupervised after school, and our genuine lack of concern can help make sure they find trouble, not opportunities.
Doing nothing has never been this easy.
Rummage sales, winery tours, yes. Tai Chi classes, oh, there's all sorts of great ways to ignore the needs of children. If you want to show how little you care about after-school programs, don't call 1-866-KIDS today.
And don't log on to afterschoolnow.org. Mabel, it's a wonderful feeling to make such a negative impact.
I love you, Robert.
After-school programs. Ignore them and they'll go away. A public service message brought to you by the After School Alliance, the Mott Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Do you know what a child who can't read grows up to be? A statistic.
I know I should read to my son more, but I'm just too tired.
Well, how tired will you be of getting notes from school that your child can't keep up with the class? 2 out of 3 African-American fourth graders are struggling to read. Reading to your child now for just 15 minutes a day can make a lifetime of difference. To get Read and Rise, a free booklet on how you can help your child become a good reader, call 1-866-522-READ. A public service message brought to you by the National Urban League and the Ad Council.
And we're back with Dr. Barbara Dossi. Barbara, during the break, we were talking about a number of things. And most importantly, we were discussing that nursing is an art, a science, and has a philosophy. And you seem to be a person who has created for all of us a model, as a role model, of someone, not only as a nurse, but as a human being, who really practices the art of holism and of holistic nursing. Could you share with us this wonderful model that you have incorporated into your life, and how can we invite ourselves and other nurses as well as other people into this model of being?
That's a big one. I think the thing that is important for us to look at is, first of all, I am anchored in this self-care, and I am supported by, again, I go back to my brothers and sisters, American Holistic Nurses Association, that continues to help me, you know that when I get overwhelmed in any kind of a work I'm doing or any projects or, you know, whatever's going on in my life, I just go, okay, back off again. How can I, in this moment in time? And, for example, one of the things that keeps me balanced is this experience of the breath. And an exercise that I do that is so simple that takes seconds, and literally going into it. And many people know this. It's, you know, it's a variation of several people's work, but it's just conscious, being very conscious of the, and I just literally say in and out, and I'm talking about the breath. And then I will do slow and deep. And then I'll say calm and ease. And then I will smile and I'll release any kind of worry or fear. And then we'll say present moment, the only moment. How can I move into this space? And for it's like right now, one of my nieces has lost a very precious friend this afternoon. And I'm acting as her mother because her mother is in Asia with 12 hours time difference. And helping my niece create a ritual of healing today, as they have the funeral and everything that goes on in. How can we create this sacred space of mind? And so I got an email this morning from my sister who is creating a ritual on the beach where she is in Asia. And then helping my niece create a ritual for herself with all of the support she has in her hometown. And then this afternoon at the very same time, I will be creating that ritual as well. And so how do we create a sense of sacredness? As far as art, I think it's important for nurses to really recognize they are artist healers. It's what they say that, the words that come out of their mouth, how they touch, how they look a person in the eye, and how can they create that space? For example, one of the things that I do to help me create that sense of sacredness in the work I'm doing is, as we talked about earlier, is yes, I exercise, but I do meditation practice. I have a prayer practice. I do Chinese brushstroke. I am an avid needlepointer. And often if I just need to back off, I won't sit down and do needlepoint at night after I've done my work. That's my way of unwinding and relaxing. And if I don't have the energy to needlepoint, I will just go in and maybe reorganize my yarns that always are getting in the wrong box and the wrong sack. And just going through that, and when I'm going through that, I look at life and nursing are part of my tapestry of healing. And so every beautiful thread that I touch, its color, I remember in one of the metaphors that I use is that, you know, my hand's like a paintbrush. And when I pull these threads out and, you know, put three or four combinations new together that I've never done, that is part of this artist healer of looking at whatever this is. And that simply happens to be one of my ways. My husband and I are getting ready to... a break that we take every year is we go to the high country. We're backpackers, and we literally go sleep in a tent. You know, most people wouldn't like this. We've been doing it since 1967. Every year we go out and we go into the high country. We're at 10,800 feet, and we have no phone, fax, email. You have to ride in a day on horses to get us. And, you know, we try to get everything, you know, in order, but we literally are out there in sacred space.
Well, when we called you a pioneer, I didn't realize the significance of that word.
Oh.
You are really pioneering out there, aren't you?
Yeah. Now, but keep in mind, we've been doing this for 67. We have got good gear. We know how to do great meals, and we've got it down to a fine art. But the point is that we, for us, we don't need to go somewhere else in a hotel room, you know, where there's TV and all of that stuff. We do short trips like this, but this is one of the things that's absolutely sacred for us. It's where we literally can back off and we go into these profound spaces in nature that, you know, helps us in this work.
It sounds as if you do a lot of centering. You're in a continual process of centering. It reminds me, Barbara, of for those of us who are old enough to remember, back in the 60s, Ram Dass used to talk about be here now, and this kind of the consciousness of being in that moment, being mindful, being present. And what a wonderful program you have set up for yourselves, going deep into the soul of nature. Remarkable process. And it reminded me when you were talking about needle pointing that we can kind of create new space anytime we focus and we concentrate and we're mindful and really immersing ourselves into the moment. And that's what it seems that your theme is. Your life culture seems to be about living in the very moment that you're in.
Right. Healing happens in the moment. And we cram our brains full of all of these facts and, you know, things we've got to do. But centering then allows us to go into emptying. And when we empty, we can face the shadow, the fears, the anxieties. There is this wise wisdom within us and also without whoever it is that we connect with, that divine energy. And for everybody, it is a little bit different. And then we can ground ourselves to go into the next level of the work that we need to do and connect at a very profound level.
Now, Barbara, in the interview that was done with you in Alternative Therapies, you talked about how your husband Larry does needlepoint as well. Do you want to share that with us? I think that's kind of marvelous. Now, have you worked on needlepoints together?
Oh, yeah, we have. And even if we're working on separate pieces, we might get bored with a piece that we're working on, or we can't figure out what we need to do, and we'll even switch pieces.
Oh, wow.
And work on each other's pieces. But one of the things that we do in our work, right before we finish a piece, we will put a piece of hair of each of our heads
in the back
of our needlepoint. And it's just, you know, a way of bringing closure to that piece.
When I read that, that was so, it was so intimate and moving and touching. And what an extraordinary thing. Who came up with that? Was it you or your husband?
Well, actually, one of the things that happened is, you know, both at 61 and 63, but, you know, some time ago, and I have very long, I have a big head of hair, and so does he. And a piece of hair got in the back of one of my threads, and he saw me with a needle trying to pull it out, and he said, leave it in there, and he said, I'm going to put a thread too. And this happened like about 15 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I went, oh, my heavens, because these pieces are just labors of love. I mean, we've got big tapestries that are 4'9" and chairs and pillows and...
Unbelievable.
You know, our house
wow.
is, you know, looks like a... Well, it's a tapestry.
Now, well, let me ask you this, because this is so much a part of who you are and what you do. You talk about the artist and the healer. How do you feel that your needlepoint informs your nursing and your nursing informs your needlepoint? Because this is, to me, the real soul of integration and holism, when everything is everything and when all things begin to blend into that great oneness of experience.
Right. What happens with a piece of needlepoint is I have an idea about where I'm going with it, but then as I begin to work on it, I change patterns, I do different stitches, I combine threads I've never done before. But what happens with needlepoint, with the brushstroke, is it is the repetitiveness of the needle in and out, or the brush, dip the ink, do the mark on the paper. You go into another space, and when this happens, this is that, aha, how did I, you know, what did I do with that stroke? You know, what did I do with, and there are many people that are going to be listening to this that probably do needlework, and they know what it's like when they pull that thread, and the thread lays perfect. You don't have to do anything. It has to do because the tension and the ease of the thread is just absolutely perfect, and you get into a flow state. And so when you practice these different kinds of experiences, like the breath work, a relaxation, or an imagery, and when I talk about the high country, if I get really stressed, which is all the time, I will back off and I'll go, I can put myself, because I've practiced so much, I can literally, within seconds, I see myself at the first high mountain lake Larry ever took me to in 1967, and I am sitting there, I am doing needlepoint, I'm also doing my breath work, I am watching Larry as he is fly fishing, putting his little fly on his line, and he tosses that line out, and in these high mountain lakes, you can see 30 and 40 feet down, and you can see the trout swimming. You know, they're just exquisite lakes. So I use that high mountain lake as a metaphor. How do you go below the surface, you know, the level of the surface of water, go down and down and down? And it is that going down, getting out of the ordinary day-to-day stuff that we touch in, and we connect with this divine wisdom that is part of being a human being. We are able to hear a higher voice, again, whatever it is that people connect in that way, but we hear a different level of conversation, and we have that inner wisdom and a higher wisdom that we can connect with to do the work that we are called to do in our lives.
Well, you have just so poignantly, beautifully, and wonderfully wrapped up the essence of what nursing, your work, your life, and hopefully the life of many other good men and women in the nursing profession are doing, and what their work is about. Barbara, you are an eloquent, passionate, inspiring, and awesome representative for the nursing profession and for us, all of us as human beings. And we've come to the end of our program. I could listen to you forever. You are wise and kind and warm and loving, and we are all very grateful to you for the work that you do, the work that you've done, the work that you will continue to do, for your transforming and loving work and contributions to the nursing profession, which affects all of us, whether we are nurses or whether we are fortunate enough to be administered to by nurses. So I, on behalf of all of us, I want to thank you for coming on today and for sharing all that you have. In the last minute, is there anything else you would like to say to the audience, or is there something you'd like to leave
yes.
us with?
With my nursing colleagues, Louise Seelander, Steva Marie Beck, Alex Attawill, and a few more colleagues that are not nurses, we are in the process of connecting. It is called the NIH Project, the Nightingale Initiative for Global Health, And with this, we are doing two United Nations resolutions, declaring the International Year of the Nurse in 2010, and then the International Year of Global Health, Our Healthy World, in 2020. People can go to our webpage that actually is under construction right now, but www.ourhealthyworld.org, and find out more about this project, because it is a grassroots level where we will be inviting all nurses around the world to connect and do their work through this vision of Nightingale's Initiative.
Well, that's such a wonderful piece of information for everyone to know. We're going to put that up on your personal page on nurseradio.org, so anyone can contact your website or can email you and get in touch with this wonderful work that you're doing. And again, Barbara, we wish you the very best, many, many blessings for the extraordinary and wonderful work that you're doing. And it's been a privilege, a pleasure, and an inspiring journey to speak with you today. And thank you again for coming on the show.
Okay, thanks so much. It's really been wonderful.
You take care, Barbara.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.